White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 457.
White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with TheWarEagleReader.com, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we took a week off, but the people out there still got to hear a show last week because we were able to shift over the episode 6 of We Believed. And that is that was part 1 of the Tuberville era.
Yeah, the early Tuberville years.
Yeah, that's a show that we created. We've been putting these together every periodically. We started it in late 18 and recorded all the way through 19, and now we have like 2 more to record. I'm producing episode 8, which is the Chizik era. Episode 7 went up for our patrons. It's just one of the neat things about doing this, the We Believe show, is that it gives us material we can get out to the public later, but in the early days, we can put it out for our patrons to hear for a few months, depending on how long it takes to come up with the next one, as a kind of a little special bonus and thank you. So it really knocked, killed a couple of birds with one stone there, because it gave us a show last week, a two-hour-long content that our listeners wanted to hear. But it also, the new episode gave the patrons a new bonus. So, and you said that you've been checking it out. You're obviously participating when we record it. We recorded it some time ago. So you're digging how it all came out?
I am. But again, I participated, but I haven't heard the interviews with all the other people that you included until I actually listened to the episode.
Yeah.
So, the Reynolds Wolf and Jerry Hinden and all the other people, Jeremy Henderson and everybody else, I haven't heard all those until I get to that point. So,
and Cole Kublik this time, which was cool.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Got Cole.
So, lots of good stuff. And the biggest thing I like about the We Believe thing is that they're timeless. A lot of our other podcasts are about specific games and events that matter and how we're feeling like that day and that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing I really like about the We Believe thing is they're this kind of timeless, evergreen look back at stuff, and you could mm-hmm. listen to them anytime.
Yeah, exactly. And I was noticing, because like I said, we recorded some of this as far back as like a year ago, and yet when I go back and engineer it and edit it and everything, I'm like, no, there's nothing I need to take out. It's all good, right? We're talking about we're retrospectively looking back, so. And yeah, and I've been able to find a lot of good audio clips, too, that I've been putting in there, too. I went through, when we started it over a year ago, I went out and found, like, every Jim Fife and Rod Bramblett great call I could find from 1981 through now, And I've got a whole folder full of MP3s of their greatest plays labeled by year and by game and by play. And so when I come to that year and that game and that play, I just go and grab it and plug it in. I have to do a little editing on it, but it's, and then I have to find music, bumper music for it and all. But it's just really been like, it's a ton of work. And I was saying on Twitter the other day, the hardest part of putting those shows together for me now, since everything's pretty much in the can and I have to put it together, the hardest part for me is I have hours of interview audio and I have to go back and sift through them. Like if I remember Jerry Hinnon talking about the first time he saw Cam Newton, I have to, go back and sift through like 2 hours of conversations with Jerry to find that one little paragraph, in the audio. Or if I know that Reynolds was talking about the first time he saw Bo Jackson, I have to go back and sift through hours, an hour of talking with Reynolds. So it is a real labor, but it's a labor of love. And I hope that folks out there are enjoying it and it's worth their while. And by the way, the first 5 are on auwishbone.com, like permanently housed there. And I'll put 6 up as soon as I get a chance. And if you're a patron, you can listen to 7 right now and get the 2004 team that went undefeated with Cadillac and Ronnie and Jason. That episode is on the Patreon site for patrons only, and it'll be there probably for at least a month or two before it goes out to the regular public, depending on how quickly I can edit number 8. All right, well, enough about that. There's Auburn stuff to talk about. Not only do we have a little bit of basketball news going on because we're about to start the SEC tournament, but tonight is our annual Wishbone Awards.
37th annual.
Yeah, it is the 37th. Our show has only been around since 2012, and yet somehow, this is the 37th annual AU Wishbone Awards. I like it. So, and this year we did a little bit different. We actually have some input from the patrons, too. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But first up, we won a big basketball game against Tennessee on the road Saturday. And I only got to see the very end because Mira was competing in the Scholar Bowl in Valmeyer, Illinois, and we had to get up at 5 o'clock Saturday morning and drive there and stay all day. So we were having lunch. My wife and I were having lunch between rounds of the Scholar Bowl, and we were watching it on my phone. And so I got to see like the last 5 minutes of the game. But the impression I got was that Samir had a big game. What did you take from that game?
Samir had a huge game. They consistently left him open and he made them pay.
Wow.
But it was the best road game we had played all year.
Wow.
And by far the best game we had played away from Auburn, offensively and defensively. The defense was great. You know, we took away shots from them. We turned them over. We forced them into bad shots. And then offensively, you know, guys made plays. Like you said, Samir was absolutely on fire. But, you know, there was a moment when Tennessee came charging back. We were up, we were up like 15 points in the second half, and they came charging back. It cut it way down. Mm-hmm. And Javon made a few baskets. He made, you know, he drove and made a basket, and then he hit a big three, and then Samir hit another shot, and we pulled back away. You know, they were just like these steady senior guards who were like, we got this. We're okay. And some other guys stepped up and had, you know, it was tough because we got in foul trouble. You know, Wiley had 4 fouls a lot of the game. Anfernee actually fouled out. He got a terrible technical called on him, which was just preposterous. Okoro had 4 fouls a lot of the game. So we were in a bit of a spot. But other guys stepped up. Flanagan had a really good game, slashing to the basket and scoring about 10 points. And, you know, the biggest thing was just Samir and Javon just took over. But, you know, Tennessee's a good team, but we went into their building in front of a huge crowd and really beat them pretty solidly on the road.
Well, let me ask you this then. How much of it was that we played better than usual, and how much of it was that Tennessee did things that let us do well?
No, we played better than usual. Like, okay. We shot so much better than we normally do on the road. We played better offensively. We moved better. We got ourselves in a position to get better shots. So that was the big thing. And it was a big win because they were definitely we're the 2 seed in the tournament. We get the double bye. We don't get to have to play Kentucky until the final. So it mattered.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was my other question. Looking at we have in front of us the tournament brackets. How did Florida not end up in the top 4? There was a moment there where Florida looked like they might end up jumping over us and knocking us down, and they ended up not even in the top 4.
Yeah, they had a bad stretch, bad series of games down the stretch. Everybody thought they were going to be it, but
yeah,
you know,
that was kind of a lock that it was Kentucky, Auburn, Florida, and whoever the other one is.
I don't know how many they lost down the stretch, but their final record was 19-12 and 11-7.
Oh wow, yeah.
Conference. So we ended
up 12-6. So yeah, because they had the tiebreaker over us, but it doesn't matter if you're not tied.
That's right.
I wouldn't mind seeing them again. We beat them in the tournament last year, in the SEC tournament last year. Although it was the hardest game we played arguably in the SEC tournament. That's the way it always goes. Those early games, I feel like we caught Florida maybe in like the first round we were playing, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe
they're on the Kentucky side of the bracket, so we won't see them unless we make it to the final.
Okay, so let's see how we come in on Friday at the 6 o'clock Central time frame, playing the game five winner, which is the two teams that beat us recently. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's good or bad. We either get Texas A&M or Missouri. Now, here's the thing. We lost to Missouri on the road. I can vouch for that because I was there. But we lost to Missouri on the road, and it was fairly close all the way through. It was never a blowout, and Lord help if Missouri blew us out, but it was fairly close all the way through. We could just never quite close the gap. And watching the A&M game the other day was kind of the same thing, right? Both the A&M game and the Missouri game the last few weeks, in both cases, they, you know, both of them got ahead of us by like a handful of points early, and in both cases, they would like, they get up to like a 7-point lead, and then we kind of catch up, and then they'd extend it back out, and we would catch up, and they'd extend it back out. And we just, in neither one of those games did we ever turn the corner. You know, we could never quite close the deal. We'd get right up to them, and then they'd pull away again. And so I feel like neither one of them blew us out. You know, we didn't have a game this year like the Kentucky game last year where we just got decimated. And even at Kentucky, we didn't have a game like we did at Kentucky last year. So so even if this team isn't, and maybe the Tennessee game, you know, Saturday means we are peaking finally at the right time. Maybe we just wait until the last game of the regular season to peak. But even if we're not, this team didn't get blown out by anybody, and the two teams we could possibly play on Friday are teams that, even though they beat us, I feel like we're competitive with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I don't think there was any structural thing where they were just absolutely a bad matchup for us. I think we had some problems with Texas A&M's inside guys.
Yeah.
But I feel like if we played them again, it would be a different deal.
And we didn't have a Coro against Missouri either.
No. No, I think it'd be a big difference against that guard from Missouri that had a lot of success against us.
So if we beat, let's see, if we beat, 9-10, if we win in our Friday game, we play the 2:30 p.m. Saturday against probably LSU.
Yes.
Who's the game six? Let's see. That would be
South Carolina against, and so it's LSU against either South Carolina or the winner of Arkansas Vanderbilt.
So probably LSU versus South Carolina. I think we can. You never know, but yeah.
But Arkansas has been pretty hot. It could be them. But I think LSU is going to come out of there. I think that's pretty.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a very competitive tournament this year. There hasn't. I mean, Kentucky was the dominant team overall, but there were stretches of season even they didn't look that great.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, last year Tennessee did us a favor and knocked Kentucky off so that we could beat Tennessee and be the tournament champions. That was very considerate of Tennessee to do the heavy lifting for us so we could then turn. Imagine this. Imagine if Kentucky had beaten Tennessee in the SEC tournament last year. We'd have played Kentucky and gotten blown out by 20-something and then turned around like a week later and played them in the SEC tournament and then possibly turned around and played them again in the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Sure.
That's a little more Kentucky than I want on my plate in any given year.
Amen to that.
That's a little tough. That's some tough meat. You need a little white meat on that plate. You don't need it all to be gristle. That's some gristle and tough stuff there. So any other thoughts about the basketball team?
No, other than I feel good. I do think the Tennessee game means that they're, you know, starting to come together at the right time. I think Bruce Pearl has been through this before, and he knows how to get teams to do that. And I think we're going to play good basketball this weekend.
Yeah, I see. When it's in Nashville, right?
Yep,
I believe so. So that doesn't seem like it really favors. It's not like we're going to probably play Tennessee, and so it's fairly neutral. In fact, Tennessee plays Alabama. That'll be a fun game on Thursday. Fortunately, we're on spring break this week, so I'll get to watch a lot of this. I wish it was the first week of the NCAA tournament that we had spring break, but I'll get to see a good bit of this because I'll be at home. So, all right, well, that's cool. And then, of course, on our next show, we'll talk about where we ended up in the NCAA tournament and all that. So that'll be fun. And we'll have our brackets coming up for our patrons. So let me go ahead and tell everybody now, John. I sent out the email today to everybody that's a member saying, if you're interested, join up for our Fantasy Formula One League, where all our patrons get to play, get to participate. You get to make up two teams and participate in the season. If they have a Formula One season, I'm starting to wonder now. They just announced, you know, they announced the China race is canceled and the Bahrain race is going to be raced in front of no audience. So it's getting kind of weird already. But I'm wondering about the Vietnam race. But also, we have the tournament brackets coming up, and you're in charge of that, right? So you'll be going, you'll be sending out notices for our patrons that want to do that, correct?
100%. And that, again, that'll be. The brackets come out Sunday night. SEC tournament ends Sunday. The brackets come out Sunday night, and then we'll know.
So get ready. So, yeah, so if you want to participate in either one of those things, the Fantasy Formula One and or the NCAA tournament brackets Pick'em Challenge, just go ahead and go to www.auwishbone.com and click on that Become a Patron. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can support the show and get to do fun stuff with us as part of our AU Wishbone Patreon family. All right, I think it's time. I don't know how many years we've been doing this, several, but what we
37.
Do... 37. Yeah, 37, that's right, I keep forgetting. But what we do is every year about this time, we go through and we have a different set of categories. Some of them stay the same every year. Sometimes we add new ones and delete old ones. And so we have just kind of some fun categories, and we each have come up with our nominees. And this year we asked the patrons for nominees, and they suggested a few too. We also let the patrons suggest categories, and we added a couple of those too. So, and we have one new category suggested by one John Ringer. So what is our first category, John?
The first category is Soundboard Clip of the Year.
And I guess I better turn on the soundboard so that we can celebrate in style with the winner. So,
Do you want me to give you the nominees first?
Or sure. Just the no, no. Let's do the not. Let's let the folks hear the nominees.
All right. The nominees are Better at Celebrating.
Okay.
I thought you were going
to
play it.
That's the only thing is, you remember I had to redo this, and everything's in a different place now. So it's like, if you tell me Better at Celebrating, I'm liable to hit.
Come on. Come on, man.
Because I don't know where it is. It's
all right.
There, I have different. I have different color codes.
You are out of order.
But that's not. You see, I have.
Holy cow!
And I.
Carry on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was one write-in vote for "Come on, man."
All right. So you said, "What's the first nominee?"
Better at Celebrating.
Yeah, we gotta get better at celebrating.
All right. That was a classic one. That lent itself to a T-shirt. So gotta like that. All right.
The second one was Smoke Weed Every Day.
Smoke Weed Every Day.
I know where that one is. That has a place of honor, man. That's our traditional one.
The third one was specific to this football season. It was King Tut.
Now when he was a young man, he never thought he'd see people stand in line to see the boy King.
King Tut.
How'd you get so funky?
Funky Tut.
Did you do the funky?
Auburn. All right. That's a little longer one, but...
All right. The fourth nominee is the Vulgars from Poldark.
The Vulgars are full of sound and fury, but believe me, they would not dare take things further.
That show's not even on the air anymore, and it's still classic.
The fifth one is Two Little Kids Misbehaving.
Just right two little country kids outside misbehaving.
There you go. All right. There's our five nominees. And I don't have a sound clip for, so we'll just do that. And the winner, what do you think?
The winner is?
Yeah.
Smoke Weed Every Day.
Smoke Weed Every Day.
Woo! All right.
And it was a close vote over Better at Celebrating. And we did have three write-in responses. One was Come On Man. One was Blame Yourself.
And I...
Nope.
Blame Yourself.
Nope. That's the wrong one. There we go.
And one was Soviet National Anthem.
Russia, number one. Iran, number one. Bama, number one. Oh, it never gets old. My wife is always, when the show is over, my wife's like, you did the Soviet National Anthem thing again, didn't you? Because she can just hear that part. She can't hear the music. She just hears me going, Russia, number one.
And she's like, what is he doing?
She's like, this is who I married.
I don't have facts to back this up.
So, all right, there's enough of that. Now, Our next category, John.
All right, next category, next question is Surprise Player of the Year.
Yeah, Surprise Player of the Year. We've done this one for a while now. And the
nominees are Bo Nix, Bryce Brown.
Ooh, get a little basketball action.
Chuma Okeke.
Another little basketball action. I like it.
KJ Britt.
Okay.
Or DJ Williams.
All right. So... And the winner
Chuma
is?
Chuma Okeke.
Chuma!
A miracle at Jordan Harris!
Except it's not at Jordan Harris at Auburn Arena. Okay, so you're giving out the winner of our vote of our patrons, right?
Yes.
Okay, so soundboard clip of the year, I'm not going to vote on that. I'll take their word for it. Surprise player of the year, the patrons said, Chuma. Who do we say? This is always fun. We get to do our little negotiation over this and decide.
I like the idea of Chuma because he was a freshman coming into last season and we didn't know anything about him. You know what I'm saying? I think we knew Bryce Brown was going to be good.
Yeah,
we knew KJ Britt was going to be good. We knew Bo Nix was going to be good.
That's true. For surprise player of the year, yeah, I think Chuma's a good choice. Okay. All right. Next category.
The next category is disappointment of the year, either player or moment.
Okay, so either a player that disappointed us or some moment in some season of some sport that we were kind of like, oh, man.
And they're all moments or events. They're not individual.
This is a real roll of dishonor. So go ahead and tell us the nominees for disappointment of the year. Wah, wah, wah.
All right, choice number one, losing to Minnesota in bowl game.
Blame yourself.
I'm blaming myself. Option number two, losing to UVA in the Final Four.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Option three, Gatewood transferring.
Please clap.
I don't know.
Option four, losing the LSU game.
And I say you.
Option five, Chuma Okeke injury.
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
Option six, news about Greg Robinson and Quan Bray being arrested.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
That is perfect. Okay.
All right. Option seven, the Florida game, football game, the whole game.
What the hell is the world coming to?
I just kind of randomly pushed those and they worked out perfectly. I could never do that again that well. Wow. Okay. So losing to Minnesota, the quote-unquote loss to Virginia, asterisk, Gatewood transfer, LSU game, Chuma Okeke getting injured, what happened with Greg Robinson and Quan Bray and a trunk full of drugs, and the whole Florida game. And the patrons say?
Losing to UVA.
Losing to Virginia in the Final Four.
Now, I want to say, in the vote by the patrons, that narrowly beat the Florida game.
Wow. Okay. Well, these are all so good/horrible, you know, in terms of horribleness, these are all horrible. I mean, every single one on here, well, Gatewood transferring, I was more like, yeah, but the Greg Robinson and Quan Bray, I was kind of like, tisk, tisk, that's just so disappointing. But in terms of Auburn sports, losing to Minnesota, quote, losing to Virginia, unquote, the LSU game, Chuma injury and the Florida game are all just devastating moments, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you feel? So you say that the Virginia Final Four loss was the patron's choice. What is your choice?
I mean, the way the UVA loss happened, being down 10, then going up to be ahead and then losing that way on the double dribble that wasn't called is very, very hard. But the Florida game was also, that was like one moment. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The Florida game was like 4 hours of being run over or something. That was tough. It was Bo Nix was really struggling in that game and we didn't have a lot of other options.
I'm going to say this one thing is they're all disappointing, but if you think what was at stake, I think that the loss to Virginia in the Final Four, there was more at stake there than any of the others. I mean, the Florida game, we were undefeated or whatever, and there was a lot at stake at that point. But when we look back at the whole season, then you kind of say, well, in retrospect, there wasn't as much on the line against Florida as we thought there was, you know. And the Chuma injury, was, it's not like he disappointed us, it's that a bad thing happened to him. So I'm going to say, in the circumstances and surrounding it too, I'm going to agree with the Virginia game. Because it was just such a crap way to lose too, you know?
Yep.
All right. What is our next category?
Question four. The Trevon Reed Award for hyped offensive stud who does very little.
Ah, yeah. Trevon Reed still appearing on our awards for at least one more year. So this is the award for the hype stud receiver who really accomplishes not much of anything, even though we were told he was going to be great. So who are our nominees this year? Because we always have some.
Marquise McClain.
Okay.
Zach Farrar.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Hill.
Well, I think Matthew Hill contributed in various ways. I know we got to get the patron vote, but it's while I'm thinking about it. Matthew Hill contributed in various ways. I'm not sure I was super down on him. The other two, though, So we'll get the vote of the patrons. They chose?
Patrons chose Matthew Hill.
Really?
I think because he was the highest rated recruit of those three.
Okay.
But he looked good in this category. I'm with you. I do not agree.
Well, he looked good in the A-Day game, too, and that always leads to us getting down on receivers that come out and look great at A-Day and then don't do anything in the season. That's happened a number of times in the past.
Fair.
Yeah. So who do you say?
I'd say Marquise McClain. He played a lot. I mean, Farrar was a transfer, and we thought he would step in. And I think I probably would have voted – maybe I would have voted for Farrar.
I think I would have voted for Farrar just because we brought him in for a specific.
And he did zero.
Yeah, exactly. He came in as a graduate transfer or whatever to do a specific job that the team desperately needed when we lost Darius Slayton, and he didn't do it. And so he went on a scale of 0 to 100. He was a zero. Yes. I mean, maybe he did some special team stuff I'm not aware of, and that's great. But the job we brought him in to do, he totally did not do. So I'm going.
Matthew Hill did a ton of stuff on special teams.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think Farrar did anything.
Exactly. All right, I'm going with Farrar. Let's see. What's our next category?
Question five: the Eric Smith Tough Guy Award.
Oh, I got that one out of order down here. Okay, the Eric Smith, and if you recall, he was our fullback on Cam's 2010 team, and around that era. And was just an all-around rough, tough fullback, you know, kind of a pass-catching H-back fullback that could do it all. So, who are our nominees for Tough Guy?
Sean Shivers, Jared Harper.
Yeah.
Tough Guy. Derek Brand.
Oh, yeah.
Marlon Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
KJ Britt.
All right. So here's the problem we're going to have with a lot of these categories is that Derek Brown is a nominee in a lot of these categories. So, Sean Shivers had that one moment. Again, I know we're going to hear the vote, but Sean Shivers had that one moment. And Jared, of course, was tough as nails for a little guy, right? Just tough as nails. But I feel like from his entire body of work, and it's a great big body that picks you up and slams you into the turf, you can't go against Derek Brown here, can you?
So.
Well, what are the what? And the patrons say?
Sean Shivers.
Okay. It was that one moment that was so visible, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a go-ahead touchdown in the Iron Bowl.
It was. Well, no. Nobody can take anything away from him. I just feel like Derek put it together play after play, game after game. Sean had, that one big
play. Well, I think Marlon was great, too. And I think kind of you get some Derek Marlon splitting the vote here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So who do you say?
I mean, I get the Shivers thing. I really do. I mean, it was, But, I mean, I honestly, I might vote for Marlon.
Okay. That's cool. Spread the love around. All right. What's our next category?
The next one is overall Auburn Player of the Year.
Okay, overall, yeah, we kind of got our order mixed up, but that's okay. We'll just jump around.
Sorry.
That's okay. So our overall Auburn Player of the Year in any sport, pretty much, although we really only track football and basketball in our show. We used to only do football on this show, but basketball kind of elbowed its way in and said, you will pay attention to us, and we love it. So really just out of football and basketball, no horses made the cut. But all right, so who are our nominees for overall Auburn Player of the Year?
Big shock. Derek Brown.
Yes.
Bo Nix.
Yes. Okay.
Jared Harper.
Yeah.
Bryce Brown.
Ooh. Man, that's four worthy nominees. I mean, well, let's go ahead and get who the patrons say?
Derek Brown.
Derek Brown. There you go.
Runaway.
Yeah. I get that. But man, for me personally, though, as much as I love Derek Brown, I got to go with Bryce Brown. I just thought Bryce was so clutch game after game after game, single-handedly in some cases giving us offense, you know. And you can see this year's team what happens when you take him and Jared away, you know.
Yeah.
And Jared's up there too. I mean, I think Bo finishes last just because while he had a good, you know, year, it was his freshman year. He's got a long way up to go, whereas Bryce was a senior and Derek Brown was a senior. So I'm going to vote for Bryce Brown with full salute to Derek for sure. What do you think?
I get that 100%. Yeah. I got to vote for Derek Brown, though. I just thought he was – but I get the Bryce Brown thing. He was so big in so many games.
When I was saying that Auburn basketball was my happy place, it was when Bryce was knocking down three after three after three. We took it for granted in some ways – until you see this year's team
they took us to places we've never been before.
Never
That's
been.
Worth something.
Oh man, absolutely. Okay. So yeah, in a similar way, Bo Nix would have had to lead us to like the playoff or something to really have qualified equal that. So okay, where are we now? Because I'm totally lost track of the
It's fine. I'll keep us going. The next question is most Auburn thing ever of the year. Suggested by Auburn Obis.
The most Auburn thing ever for this year. All right. And what are our nominees? I like this, Obis.
So option number one, finishing with fewer than 10 wins in football.
That's an Auburn thing.
Option two, losing to Minnesota in bowl game.
After, yeah, everything looked like we're finally getting our, 10th win or whatever. And, oh, man, yep.
Last year's basketball team starting 2-4 in the SEC and then making the Final Four.
I'm not sure that's an Auburn thing. I would like for that
now.
I was going to say I'd like for it to be an Auburn thing moving forward, but yeah.
I think part of it is the lowering of expectations and then delivering.
Yeah, that's valid. Yeah, that part of it is definitely valid. I'm going to open me up another beverage here. Okay.
All right, the next one is winning 4 out of 5 games in a row in overtime for basketball during this season.
That was a crazy run. At the time, it was just part of the fun, but we're going to look back and say, man, they were resilient, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then the LSU football game, so close, but we could not score.
Oh, that is an Auburn thing. All right, I'm really not sure where to go with this one. So what do the patrons say?
Losing to Minnesota in the bowl game.
Yeah, that is so Auburn.
But close, it barely beat out the basketball team starting 2-4 in SEC play and then making the Final Four.
I honestly, the thing that's the most Auburn thing ever to me is the LSU game, playing them the way we did and still losing and being able to have – because it's so Auburn, right, to be able to have something at the end of the season that we can point to and brag about even though it's a loss. That's so Auburn, you know. Well, we did this thing and lost, you know, and everybody else is just rolling their eyes like, yes, we know, you played LSU closer than everybody else. Doesn't matter, you still lost. And we're like, yes, but we did it. And everybody's like, shut up. And that's just so Auburn. And that's just who we are. It's fine. So I'm going to go LSU game. Do you have a thought on that one? Or are you good with losing to Minnesota?
I might go for the basketball one just because it was so crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
The turnaround was so bonkers.
It's true. Let's see. All right, what's our next category?
Next question is player who best demonstrates work, hard work, suggested by Darren Pyle.
Okay, Darren, thanks. That's a good one. Yeah, so the whole work, hard work thing from the Auburn Creed, which of our players best demonstrated that? And our nominees are?
Austin Wiley, specifically for free throw improvement over the years.
No kidding.
Jeremiah Denson from his freshman year to senior year.
Okay.
Bryce Brown from his freshman year to senior year.
No doubt.
And then Sean Shivers.
Okay. That's an interesting mix. I'm not really sure where to go on that. So let's see what the patrons say.
Bryce Brown.
Okay.
Freshman year to senior year.
Good. Yeah, because he was not a highly recruited player, and that he was the heart and soul, though, of that team last year. I'm good with that. I mean, I do commend Austin Wiley for his amazing. That definitely was hard work. You can watch him and tell that he put a lot into that. But yeah, with a nod to Austin Wiley, I'll go with Bryce Brown.
I'm with you 100%. I think his growth was tremendous.
Yeah, and you knew it was like his dad was working with him, and they were just he didn't just get lucky with all those three pointers. He worked at being able to hit those three pointers.
He did, and also like he worked on his defense. He worked on his ball handling.
Mm-hmm. Great defensive player before he was done. Yeah.
And he used to get very emotional in games too. And I think he worked on keeping more of an even keel too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What's next?
All right. The next one is big moment of the year. Now, it's not game of the year. It's moment, like within a game.
Ooh. All right. And by the way, I'm calling an audible here. Let's do save. We skipped about five in the middle that we need to go back to. So let's save game of the year for the end, because that's a good one to end on. Okay. So big moment of the year, like a play or something like that.
Option one, Sean Shivers running over Alabama guy to score go-ahead touchdown.
That one's going to be tough to beat.
You get, yeah. That's gonna be tough. Early front runner. Number two, every Bryce Brown three-point shot.
Those were all big. That, no doubt. No doubt about it.
Beating Tennessee to win SEC basketball tournament.
That was huge. I mean, I would have even thrown in beating Kentucky in the NCAA tournament to get to the Final Four.
Yeah, I'm surprised that was one. Probably should have been in the other category. And then Bo Nix passed to Seth Williams to beat Oregon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, big moment. So, yeah, beating Tennessee wasn't really a moment, but that's true, yeah. There was like a moment in that game. But, yeah, the Bo Nix pass to Seth, it was kind of like a replay of his dad to Frank Sanders. Okay. I feel like Shivers is going to win this just because it was so cinematic and visual. But let's go ahead and see. Patrons say?
Sean Shivers.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to go with that.
I agree. It was a huge moment. It was a moment.
Yeah. I mean, look.
And it's been commemorated in a painting.
And a T-shirt. You can go to www.auwishbone.com and get Jared's painting of it on a T-shirt right now. Just click on the T-shirts link, the little box, and you can go get you a T-shirt of Sean Shivers' Big Moment of the Year. I need to put that on the shirt now. Big Moment of the Year winner from the AU Wishbone Awards. That's awesome. Okay, so we're going to hold off on Game of the Year. We got a couple of others before that. I think we had, like, Offensive Player of the Year, maybe?
We did. So there's some – I could not put all the ones on the – where the patrons could vote, so these other ones are just going to be me and you.
Oh, okay. All right, so Offensive Player of the Year. Who are our nominees?
One second.
Well, I've got them in front of me if you want me to.
I got it. Offensive Player of the Year, the nominees are Bo Nix, Dartavius Whitlow, and Seth Williams.
This is just football only, in other words. This is just football only. So, Bo, Booby, and Seth. Because, I mean, honestly, they're really, I guess, Shivers didn't really make, because this is like of the whole year, not just moment.
Yes.
I'm going to have to go with Bo Nix, honestly. Because, I mean, Booby had his moments when he was the only running back that could do anything. And Seth Williams had his moments, but, I mean, Bo made the whole engine run every game. And if Bo was up, the team was up. And if Bo was down, the team was down. I got to go with Bo.
I get it, and I'm with you. I'd probably vote for Bo, too. But I'm really thinking about voting for Seth. I just feel like he was the most dominating player at his position.
In his moments, he was. Yes, I agree. That's fair. Okay, we'll leave that one kind of ambiguous. We don't mail anybody a trophy for these, so it doesn't have to be a definitive thing. All right, I've got defensive player of the year next.
I'll call the engraving people. And
So we're still in football. Defensive player of the year.
Yep. The nominees are Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson, Brown and Davidson,
attorneys at law,
and Noah Igbinogheni.
Oh well, if we can do Brown and Davidson together, I got to go with Brown and Davidson.
That's a lock, and that's the easiest
one. There you go. That was easy. All right, I got special teams player next.
Special teams player of the year nominees are the fighting Australian, Aaron Sipos, Matthew Hill, Anders Carlson, and Christian Tutt.
Man, they all had their moments, but I feel like because of his performance in the Iron Bowl, Anders Carlson redeemed any problems he'd had earlier in the season. I'm going to vote Anders Carlson.
I can't do that. He had a great game in that game, but he was not great in the other games.
No.
I'm going to vote Sipos. I think he was really good this year. Okay. We're going to miss him.
Good deal. Punters often overlooked and undervalued. So that's good. That's cool. I like it. Okay. And I think that gets us to, because we've done Eric Smith, we've done overall, blah, 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 blah. All right. So are we down to game of the year?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is our final category in the AU Wishbone Awards for 2020 for the 2019 season. And here we go. The nominees for Game of the Year, John.
All right. Option one, the Bama game, football.
The Iron Bowl. The Iron Bowl. Woo.
Option two, Oregon in football.
Yeah, that's good.
Option three, Kentucky in the Elite Eight.
There's the one we were talking about. Man, that's tough.
Option four, Tennessee in basketball at the SEC tournament final.
Yep.
Option five, Kansas in the second round of the NCAA tournament.
Ooh, okay. Okay. There was a fifth option I didn't have on my list. That's interesting.
Where we annihilated them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we did that North Carolina too. Yeah, there's something to be said for all of those. For me, it's going to come down to the Kentucky basketball game versus the Iron Bowl. And I'm just going to say, going to the Final Four, there was so much on the line. This was a team that wasn't just doing it for that one game. It was doing it for things beyond that one game. But even so, we are Auburn, and it all, the alpha and omega of our sports world is the Iron Bowl. And beating Alabama, beating Nick Saban, winning at home, keeping our streak of beating him in years when we win nine games, all those things, and then the way we did it in a high-scoring shootout and with Sean Shivers and all of that and everything that went into it and Anders making all the field goals. I mean, the only way I could put a basketball game ahead of that Iron Bowl is if we won the national championship. I think if we had beaten Texas Tech for the national championship, I would have to put that ahead of the Iron Bowl, but I just cannot. And I'm sure our listeners will have, I'm sure that some of our, I bet it's like 50-50. I bet 50% of our listeners will say, I totally agree, it's the Iron Bowl, it's football, that's what matters. And I'm sure 50% will say, you can't let football get in the way of an accomplishment like beating Kentucky to go to the Final Four. And I totally get that. It's like 51-49 for me, but I've got to go with the Iron Bowl. We'll get what the patrons say, but I want to know what you think. Do you agree with me, or do we cross up?
I agree with you. I thought about this a lot.
But yeah, you have to.
But I agree with you.
Yeah.
But the patrons said Kentucky in the Elite Eight barely edging Alabama.
Wow. Okay. Totally. Yeah. Well, again, it's close. It's You know what it really means, though? It means that we had that many huge wins that we can look back on last year.
Yes.
We had two gargantuan wins, that huge Iron Bowl and that huge win over Kentucky in the Elite Eight. Man. That's a tough one. So, okay. Well, there you go. There was our AU Wishbone Awards, and we certainly welcome feedback from the listeners. So tweet us at AU Wishbone, and you can get John and me too individually, or send us an email. We might do have a segment next week where we just talk about, what the people said in response to this, how many people said we're crazy and how many agreed with us and all that. So we would love to hear your reaction to the winners in these categories. And we appreciate our patrons for suggesting topics and for voting. So speaking of the patrons, John, before we get into our last couple of segments, we got to thank them. And I did mention the shirts. There's even a special shirt just for the patrons. So if you're a patron, go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the T-shirt link, and you can go check that out if you want to. And we're still talking about doing our telethon maybe this spring or summer. That'll be fun, like an 8-hour-long show with a bunch of stuff going on. But we got to thank our patrons for as little as $1 a month, though some of them do better than that, and we appreciate it. They help keep our show on the air and let us do crazy stuff like this. So here are the current folks keeping the lights on at the White Rocket Studios. We have a new anonymous donor that we really appreciate. We have Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. Thanks, you guys, so much. We have Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, Bradley Blackman, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens. And then we have WDE Richie. We got a few new ones this time, and we appreciate you guys so much and gals. WDE Richie, we got Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, and Christopher Stewart. Mickey B, William Morgan, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, and Rich Reimer. And then we have Blake Heron, Hugh Anderson, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling, Kevin Kinoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn. Let me take a drink for a second. Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And finally, we have Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds. We're getting close to the end. We're almost there. Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joseph A. Miller, Mark Squire, plus Chris and Brant Rumble, and our occasional donors like Surfer Chickify and our anonymous other donors and one-time donors. We thank you all. We appreciate you all so much. Again, you can join their ranks, participate in stuff like the AU Wishbone Award voting, the Fantasy Formula One League, the March Madness Pick'em. You get discounts on our various things that we're working on. You get all kind of bonuses I paste on the Patreon page. Just go to www.auwishbone.com and click on Become a Patron and get signed up today. All right, John. So let's see. We've got, I guess, is it time for questions? Is it time for questions? Is that where we are?
It is time for listener questions.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
And I say you.
Please clap.
All right. What do we got this week?
All right. First question is from Auburn Elvis.
Hey. Uh-oh.
All right.
There it goes. All right. What does Auburn Elvis say?
All right.
Go ahead.
Which is greater, the amount that Bruce Pearl makes Auburn fans happy or the amount he makes other schools' fans unhappy?
It's a tie. It's a tie. And believe me, I know this because one of my really good friends at the college, who's a faculty colleague of mine, he's an Illinois guy and he hates Bruce. We were at a trivia competition this week. And I said something about, you know, how we just love Bruce and we're so excited and he's like the most popular guy on campus and everything. And my friend said, I totally understand why Auburn people would love him, but you have to totally understand why we despise him. And I'm like, well, but because you're mad about something from 70 years ago that wasn't even that big of a deal, but okay. And he's like, no, we hate him. We despise him. We're never going to, you know, so... So, yeah, he really does. And it's going to be a shock if he ever does win a Coach of the Year award, either conference or national, even though he's up for both of them. Because for every ESPN dude that loves him, and you know those ESPN people love him. Because they worked with him. They love him. But for every one of those, there's like three national media people that are just like tapping their fingers, tapping their toes, waiting for the announcement that he's given us the death penalty or something. You know, that's what they think. That's what they think. So it's just kind of like when you get that reputation, which in this case is totally undeserved, it's just people. It's so easy, you know. People are lazy. Sports writers especially, they're lazy. And it's just so easy to go with the cliche. It's so easy to go with the same. You know, it's so easy to go, oh, Cam Newton cheated. Auburn doesn't deserve the Heisman. Auburn didn't deserve that national championship. They should have to get the trophy back. You know, it's just so easy to go with that type of the story rather than to try to understand the more nuanced and complex truth. And it ticks me off, but that's how it is. So
you were correct. I don't think Bruce Pearl makes us so happy, and he does so much good stuff for the basketball team and in the community that I'm very skeptical that it's possible for other teams' fans to, you know, to be made more unhappy. But I think because we win so much now, and they just get apoplectic about him when he's fussing at the refs and stuff. So it is a good question.
It is a good question. I will always say, I keep saying, the likelihood that Auburn could hire a coach who could absolutely legitimately be coaching Kentucky or Kansas or North Carolina was so microscopically remote. Everything had to work out the way it did for us to have a coach like him. And it did. And so I have no complaints. If he hadn't done the things he did, he would not be our coach right now. He would be at a much bigger program instead of making us a much bigger program. And so I have no complaints.
I do not either. All right, next question is from Preston Settle. He says, Van and John, I'm a member of the Sandboard Fan Club.
And we got to get better at celebrating.
Now, he has a question I don't know if we're going to be able to answer because it's about the women's basketball team.
Oh, dear. I know that they didn't do well this year and the coach did something, but that's all I really know, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so his question is like, Is the coach on the hot seat, basically? Terry Williams Forney, the women's basketball coach. He says, you know, is it time for a change? And the simple answer is, I honestly don't know. I don't pay enough attention to know. And I read some stuff about it this week where I think, like, based on her contract and how the team is doing and stuff, I don't think things are going to change. So I think she's going to get more time.
I saw some tweets from Brandon Marcello this week that he seemed to be, he wasn't concluding that, but he was basically asking Auburn fans the question, if not now, when, basically. So that was the impression I got. Maybe I'm wrong. He can tell us.
All right. Our next question is from Samuel Salvatore.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
He says, hey guys, War Eagle.
War Eagle, Sam.
He says, he's been dealing with a lot of stuff. Closing on a house and getting ready to get married this coming weekend. So congratulations to you, sir.
Yes.
His question is, another Bruce Pearl question. Do you think Tennessee fans now believe Bruce Pearl has cursed their team after winning five in a row, especially after Saturday's surprising blowout by Auburn put on them in their backyard? He says, I hope y'all are doing good. It's great to be an Auburn Tiger, and I'm anxious about the postseason.
You know, it's kind of like if Pat Dye, after he had to retire under a kind of a cloud, you know, after 1992, it's like if he went to Florida or Tennessee, even, you know, it's a team we played every year, though. So it's like if he went to Mississippi State or Arkansas and just beat our brains in every year. We'd be going, come on now. as the president would say,
come on, man.
That's what we would be saying, right? Because, Tennessee fans have to just feel miserable about that because they had him and they loved him. They didn't want to get rid of him. And then he has to go, and now he's kicking their tails and beating their brains in, man. It's rough.
It has to drive them crazy.
Oh, I wouldn't have it any other way. Don't get me wrong, but I do have a bit of sympathy in my heart. You'd have to be pretty cold not to feel kind of bad for Tennessee the way it worked out. Again, that being said, I wouldn't change a thing, but a thing, because again, if it hadn't worked out that way, he would have left Tennessee to go to somewhere bigger. It worked out the only way it could work out for us, but I still do kind of feel bad for Tennessee having to see him having all this success, B, at Auburn, not what you call a traditional basketball power most times, and C, at their expense so many times. I didn't realize it was five in a row. Man, that's this is, it's funny too, is it's beating Tennessee five times in a row at a time when they're supposed to be at one of their high points in their program.
I mean, in some moments when they think it's their time. Like last year in the SEC final, that crowd was 80% Tennessee fans. They thought it was their moment.
Absolutely. Yeah, last year's team with Admiral Schofield and everything, that was supposed to be their big team. And they got that big-time coach that's from Texas and Clemson and everything.
Rick Barnes.
Yeah, Tennessee thought they were, you know, kicking open the last door of their of their wait to be a big-time program, and they turn around and Bruce Pearl's standing there in the doorway looking like Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Here's Bruce.
Next question is from Paul Bankston, who's also asking about that game. He says, I love the points from Samir on Saturday, the production from Flanagan. Are we hitting on all cylinders at just the right time?
Well, we kind of touched on it a minute ago. I said, you know, last year's team peaked right before the end of the season and really were hitting it all big time during the SEC tournament. Because you remember about a week and a half before the end of the regular season last year, there was actual questions, would we even make the tournament? People don't realize that now. We should have, by all rights, won the national championship in basketball last year. And 2 weeks before the end of the season, we were starting to wonder if we were going to go to the NIT. And we turned it around, I think, the moment that everybody remembers. And this should have been one of those moments, I think. It got overlooked. But the moment when everything flipped around for us last year was when Chuma made that three-pointer to beat Georgia on the road, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After that, that kind of stopped the bleeding from our little losing streak toward the end of that regular season last year. And then after that, we went on that tear and didn't lose again until the Virginia game. So, they peaked late last year too, and everybody forgets that. To a degree, this year's team has played more consistently in the regular season than last year's team did, and won more games. Am I right or am I wrong? Was last year's team 11-7, and this one's 12-6? I think they were 11-7 last year.
Keep going. I'm gonna get the answer.
The last shoe that we need to drop is for this team to start hitting shots, hitting three-pointers, and making more free throws. And I don't think that's a revelation. I think everybody knows that. The question is, are we going to play like we did against Tennessee going into the tournament? If we do, we can win it again. If we don't, we're going to lose in the semifinals, if not the first game. Surely we can beat Texas A&M or Missouri this time, though.
Yes. But I do think that we're peaking at the right time.
Yeah.
In the conference, we went 11-7 last year, 12-6 this year.
That's what I was asking about. Yeah. So we actually had a better – that's what – again, everybody remembers the end of last season, all the postseason. But we actually played better in the regular season this year than we did last year.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then our last question is from Scott Crankton. Who asked a recruiting question about basketball. He says, gentlemen, will Auburn eventually sign its first Alabama Mr. Basketball during Bruce Pearl's tenure at Auburn? So far in history, Alabama has signed 18 of the Mr. Basketballs from Alabama. Wow. Mississippi State 3, Vandy 2, UAB 2, Arkansas 1, LSU 1, Kentucky 1, and even Wyoming 1. He says, it's just another sad commentary in the history of Auburn basketball. Respectfully, Scott Crankton.
Well, if there's one coming up this year or in the next couple of years, I think that we certainly have a lot better chance now than we did in the past, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. But also, it's weird that I would say we're in a recruiting stratosphere now where I've got to say that Mr. Basketball from Alabama better be pretty good and we're not going to recruit him.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like, well, wait. We're not going to take them sight unseen. They got to show us something.
We're recruiting the cream of the crop from all around the country at this point.
And
that guy's going to have to be pretty good if we're going to take him. So that's my opinion about it.
We've gone from, dang it, why can't we get him to, we don't want him.
Wouldn't play.
You know, I was going to say, we, as weird as it is that we've never gotten the Mr. Alabama basketball, we actually have signed the Mr. Kentucky basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Damian Fishback was Mr. Kentucky basketball, signed for Cliff Ellis, crazy as that sounds. So if you'd said to me, there's one of these two states we've never signed their Mr. Basketball, Kentucky or Alabama. wouldn't you have bet your house and maybe even your life on Kentucky there, and that's Alabama. But yeah, and I'm actually surprised that Sonny didn't get at least one back during the mid '80s when we were recruiting so well. That surprises me too.
I guess surprising, but Alabama was doing well then too.
Wimp had it going pretty well. And all right, let's see. I guess we can quick take a. I don't know if we have anything to talk about, but at least I'll hit the button here and.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
So, is there anything going on around the SEC other than the upcoming basketball tournament?
No, I was going to say the only thing going around the SEC is the upcoming basketball tournament in Nashville. But it was nice to hear Mira again.
So. Well, she appreciates that. I plan to have the TV on. Like I said, I'm off, and my wife are both off all this week. And I think her brother's going to be down from Wisconsin, where he's a college. We're all work at colleges. It's funny in this family. He's going to be down from Wisconsin. And so visit a couple of days, and so we'll probably see a whole lot of basketball and be hanging out. So that should be fun. You plan on you going to sneak around a little bit, get to the bars, or have it on your phone or something, or what's your plan?
I'm happy that Auburn is playing at night on Friday, because if it was during the day, it would be a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going
to
be interesting.
Probably not going to get to see the day games.
So. It's going to be interesting for me next Thursday, week from Thursday, if we're playing on Thursday. Hopefully, we'll play on Friday. If we're playing on Thursday, it's going to be one of those days where, like, the phone is on my podium and I'm talking about World War II or something and got one eye on the basketball game. Or between classes, I just slap it up on the wall, up on the projector, you know. So we'll That's see. Right. We'll see. There's always a way. Where there's a will, there's a way. All right. Any last thoughts for this week?
Let's go do some damage in Nashville.
Let's do
on
it.
Basketball.
Let's do it. Let's go out on a hot note from the conference into the tournament, get some damage done there, and let's get a good seed in the NCAAs and do some damage there. Again, as we've said all along, we don't expect national championship. We know that Final Four is a fluky thing too, but it would be nice to win a couple of games and maybe make the Sweet 16, something like that, in a year like this when we are having so much struggles on offense. Don't you think?
Yep.
It's about the highest we could really hope for realistically, I think, depending on the draw. So
it's all about the matchups.
It's all about the matchups. All right, man. I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.